Welcome, everyone. I'm delighted that everyone could be here this morning on this beautiful day in Washington, D.C., as we are all going through healthcare reform and spending a lot of time on that. And I think we've got some good news in terms of healthcare reform today that we'd like to share with you. About a year ago, last December, we announced this collaborative that we started that we call Quest. And today we wanted, at that time, we promised that we were going to update everybody on the results from this collaborative because we think it's unique. It's really the largest and most comprehensive collaborative ever undertaken. And it's our goal is to make a meaningful impact on healthcare and to share the practices across the healthcare system. So today we'd like to begin the process of sharing information with you about what's happened through this collaborative and what we're accomplishing and what we hope to accomplish in the coming months and years. So today we have a distinguished group of speakers. Susan DeVore, the President and CEO from Premier. Carolyn Clancy. Dr. Clancy is the Director of the Agency of Healthcare Research and Quality. Dr. Marty Scott, who is the Vice President of Quality and Patient Safety for the Patient Safety Institute and Clinical Effectiveness at Memorial Health University Medical Center in Savannah, Georgia. Dr. Kevin Johnson, the Network Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at SSM Healthcare in St. Louis. And then we have a couple of members of Congress who will be joining us, including Congressman Kingston, who just walked in the room. Good morning, Congressman. Nice to see you. So they'll be sort of interspersed in the program, but I think we'd like to get the Congressman up in a moment to say a few words at the outset. But what we're going to do is go through each one of the speakers one after another, and each will just get up and start speaking. We've got detailed bios on each of the speakers in your packet, which I hope everybody's gotten a copy of when you came in. So those are the speakers, and let me just begin by saying, too, at the outset, for any of you who aren't familiar with Premier, just exactly what Premier is. We're an alliance of nonprofit hospitals. We are owned by the hospitals, we work for the hospitals, and really what we try to do is overcome the fragmentation in the healthcare system. We unite these hospitals to share best practices, to improve quality while safely reducing costs. That's really what we do, and the progress that's being made is really quite remarkable. And we want to share one of these collaboratives that we do with you and the details of those results. But these are some of the facts about Premier, whether it's the largest clinical database in the country or our aggregating purchasing to lower costs for supplies and medical products. And then Quest, I mean, we talk about this Quest initiative, and people are probably going, what's Quest and why? Sounds wonderful and Don Quixote and all that kind of thing. But Quest stands for quality, efficiency, safety, and transparency, which really, in a lot of ways, epitomizes what this project's all about. So when we talk about Quest, that's what that stands for. So before I turn it over to Susan DeVore, I'd like Congressman Kingston to come up and say a few words. So Congressman, thanks for coming.
Well, thank you for letting me interrupt the program, and I just want to say this, that as we debate health care in Washington, to me, one of the things that most people miss is the size of health care, $2.4 trillion, a system that's bigger than the economies of 200 different countries around the world. And yet, as we come together to debate health care, we also see it from our own personal experience. Going to the hospital, visiting the doctor, going to med school, medical education, selling insurance, buying insurance, all the exchange. But that $2.4 trillion consists of millions of people making trillions of micro decisions every single day. And so there's a lot of concern about, well, what will Washington's role in this? Can you really centralize those decisions, or are they better to have them decentralized? And the thing that strikes me the most about Quest and the fact that Memorial Medical Center in Savannah, Georgia, which I have the opportunity to share the jurisdiction with John Barrow, who I believe is on his way over here as well, is that to voluntarily do a program like this is the equivalent of asking the IRS to come in and look at your tax returns for the last 7 years. I mean, I don't know that I want the IRS to see everything, but that is in fact what these hospitals and providers have done, which I think is the number one, the most amazing thing. Forget the results, just the fact that you're willing to do that shows that you have confidence in what you are up to. And then the fact that the quality is there because we all know quality and safety. Hospitals are dangerous places, and they're dangerous. Often we misconstrue why they're dangerous, but, you know, they're dangerous because they are literally dealing with life and death and hazardous material all day long. And so, you know, you come in there with diseases, and you want them treated. I serve on the Agriculture Committee, and one of the poultry labs that we have has as much security as any nuclear facility that you've ever seen, because they're trying to study H1N1 and all kinds of other things that are carried by poultry. And so you have them in isolated, separate buildings, and then you have to take your clothes on and off as you go from building to building to make sure you're not carrying anything. And, you know, it's amazing to say, well, we're doing all this for chickens, and then you think, yeah, but what if one got loose? You can imagine, what if some of those diseases got out? What would they do with the domestic flock? And so you want to have a controlled environment. And yet, when we talk about a hospital, we want to walk right in there and see mama. And if you find out there's somebody sick down the hall, you want to see them. And, of course, politicians, we would never be accused of holding a baby gratuitously. You know, we want to hold the baby because that's good. We want to bless the child, impart wisdom, seek votes. I think as Americans have an unrealistic view of what's going on in the hospitals when we see it. So I just think this thing is very, very impressive. I've had a procedure or two at Memorial, and I can speak for their quality. The transparency, I want to just touch base on that. I've had 18 healthcare town meetings. And if you think the First Amendment, freedom of speech, is dying in America, come to one of them. But the transparency is one of the things we get the most pushback. What are the procedures? Why is this one necessary? The doctor won't talk to me. The providers aren't telling me what I need to know. So, and then, you know, the billing might as well be in hieroglyphics. So I think, you know, more transparency is one of the things that I'm coming away from my town meetings with. In fact, if I could summarize my town meetings, people are saying to me, you know what? Don't take what I have. I'm happy with what I have. You can improve it. There's lots to be done for affordability and accessibility. But on the other hand, I want you to reform that which is broken. And I always say that if your sink is leaking, you don't take a wrecking ball to the kitchen, you fix the sink. And I think that's what our challenge is in healthcare, is to fix the parts that are broken. And I believe that programs like this are doing that all over America, particularly on a voluntary basis. So I congratulate Memorial, I congratulate all the other recipients, and I congratulate Premier and everybody involved in this program. Thanks for what you're doing, because you are on the front line of the hottest topic in America right now.
Thanks, Congressman.
Okay, so now we get to talk about what we're really trying to do. We did have 157 hospitals come together, and they basically are trying to answer the very wicked question, which is, how do you simultaneously improve cost, quality, mortality, harm, and patient satisfaction at the same time? And this group of hospitals did agree to be transparent with each other. They basically opened their kimonos. They shared all of their data, good, bad, and otherwise. They talked about what their best practices were, and they worked together to really figure out how we were going to measure this, how we were going to automate this, and how we were actually going to improve this. And so moving all five dimensions at the same time is a huge task and a huge progression, actually, from where the hospital quality incentive demonstration was. Many of you will be familiar with a CMS demonstration that Premier did around how do you improve the implementation of evidence-based care. We had huge success in that demonstration. But what our hospital said to us is, we've got to get to systemic outcome measures. We've got to be ready for reform in whatever form it takes. And so you see here up on the slide the five dimensions that we really focused on. And we amazingly were able to get 157 hospitals to agree to all the measures in each of these dimensions. And that was no easy task. And we were able to automate these measures on a continuing basis. And what was clear here is that we weren't going to be able to do all of this at the outset by the end of year one. And so what we have for the first year results is how these hospitals did in improving cost, mortality, and the implementation of the evidence all at the same time. You can see here from the map, we had 157 hospitals initially participate. We've added 31 more, so we have almost 200 hospitals now in this initiative. They're from all over the country, representing 31 states. We have big, small, urban, rural, teaching, non-teaching. And so if you think about reform and what the reform proposals need is to be informed about what works in the execution of reform. So what we're really doing is testing what might work, what might move the mark, what doesn't move the mark. And we have a broad spectrum of hospitals of all different sizes and scope. Here you see what we call turnip plots. We love our turnip plots. You probably can't see them very well on the screen. But essentially what we did was we took the 157 hospitals and we established where their starting point was. And you can see from the turnip plots that in all the different metrics we were looking at, there's a lot of variation. We've got some high performers, we've got some real low performers, and we've got everybody all over the map. And the idea here is how do you increase the reliability of care and how do you move everybody up? So how do you flatten the turnip plots and how do you move them up to high performance? And we knew we had high performers in the group already. So you see those lines across the graphs? That's where we set top performance threshold. And basically we said to the hospitals and they said to us, we want you to help us move everybody up above that top performance threshold, or as many as we can, as fast as we can. Then we worked in partnership with IHI and with several different groups. We actually have an advisory panel. Some of those members are here today. Dr. Clancy serves on that advisory panel. Alan Korn in the back from Blue Cross Blue Shield serves on that advisory panel. And this is a group of people from Joint Commission, from CMS, from AHA, from ARC, from the National Quality Forum, all the folks that are involved in how do we set these measurements, how do we write regulation, and how do we improve quality, safety, and cost in healthcare. And so all through this process, we've been advising them. But what was important about setting the measurements and then baselining everybody was to really be able to then figure out what are the root causes for mortality being not what you expected, or cost being higher than you expect, or harm occurring in your hospitals that you don't want to occur. And so with IHI, we actually were able, with IHI and with our database, to build what we call and they call driver diagrams. What are the primary and secondary things that if you could affect them would actually affect the outcomes and improve the care to patients? So now we're at the end of year one. We have 32 hospitals that have actually simultaneously moved themselves to top performance threshold or above in all three elements at the same time. And we think that's quite remarkable 1 year into this that we have 32 of the 157 that are simultaneously improving cost, quality, and mortality. And this is the list here of the hospitals. We have two representatives from those hospitals today to share with you their stories about how they did that. Thought you'd be interested to see how it's working across the different types of facilities. On the left-hand side, you can see the Quest cohort. That's the group, all the hospitals that were in this thing. And on the right-hand side, you can see the percentage that were top performers. And you can see from the chart that in most cases, it doesn't really matter what kind of a facility you are, whether you're large, whether you're small, whether you're teaching, whether you're non-teaching. The one that looks a little bit light that you can see there is rural. So it's harder for the rural hospitals potentially to get into top performance. Our review of the data would indicate that it's in some part because of the law of small numbers. They have such small numbers that any one bad thing or one, you know, unexpected case actually moves the mark pretty dramatically. But the learning here is that these improvements and this knowledge and this measurement might work pretty effectively in any hospital environment. So here's the year one results. If you look at the left-hand side there, mortality, the observed to expected mortality ratio risk adjusted. And you can see here that the baseline for all of the hospitals in this initiative was 0.99. That's what you'd expect it to be, an observed to expected mortality. By the end of year one, that overall average is down to 0.85, and we've moved from 25% of the hospitals being at what we call top performance to now 49% being at top performance. Huge movement in an indicator like mortality, and Dr. Clancy maybe can speak to this, in a one-year time frame. We'll talk a little bit more later about what we think drove some of that. If you look at evidence-based care, and this is the implementation of the evidence, every patient, every time, as defined by the core measures and some additional things that we put in it. And there you can see an even more dramatic increase, which is that the baseline had 25% of the hospitals at top performance. At the end of year one, we had 71% at top performance. We expected this to be the easiest one to move because this is those process measures. Did you do everything you were supposed to do every time for those patients in those clinical conditions? The third one, cost, we expected to be the hardest. It probably was the hardest to move. And you can see that we moved from 50% at top performance threshold to 59%. We did have to segregate the data because teaching hospitals and non-teaching hospitals, big and small, had different cost structures. So we segregated that data when we did this work. And overall, from a cost perspective, we were able to reduce cost per care, $343 a discharge. And what's really key here is that we were able to bend that curve. You know, you hear a lot about bending that cost curve. The rate of growth in cost in Quest hospitals is significantly lower than the rate of growth in cost in non-Quest hospitals. And we have the rest of our database, which includes a lot of hospitals that are not in Quest, that we were able to do some of those comparisons. So the bottom line after year one is that 157 hospitals serving 2.3 million patients a year were able to save 8,000 lives. Were able to provide 25,000 patients with everything they were supposed to get every time, and were able to save $577 million in cost. And that's 157 hospitals out of 5,000 across the country. So if you're a legislator or you're thinking about reform and you're thinking about what will work and what doesn't work and how are we going to move the provider delivery segment of the industry forward, there's a lot of really good information about how you execute on that and how you execute on it pretty quickly. If you took just the mortality part of this and you said if we tried to extrapolate just the increment of improvement that Quest delivered, in other words, all hospitals across the country are working on mortality and they're making improvements. They're making improvements in coding. They're making improvements in what the expected mortality is. If you take all that out and you just say, what was that increment of Quest improvement over and above the normal industry improvement that's going on in mortality, it would have saved 52,000 lives additional across the country. And so this is, I think, what the reformers are after in terms of how are we really going to improve healthcare. Here's the evidence-based care chart. This is the all-or-nothing score of did you get everything you were supposed to get every time. And you can see here in the green line, the Quest participants started out at a higher level. It's not surprising because many of these hospitals were also in the hospital quality incentive demonstration, so they had a bit of a head start. But you can also see that the rate of improvement is still significant. It's starting to top out now because they're getting to the high 90s in many cases of delivering that perfect care, if you will, or appropriate care. You can also see that non-Quest hospitals continue to improve. So part of what Premier is trying to do is to be this scalable force, if you will. We'll do the experiments. We'll pilot with our hospitals. We'll test the measures. We have the data. But then the idea is how do we create this rising tide in the industry that moves the whole thing? So we share it all. We're transparent. We share it externally in the industry. If you look at mortality, this to me is really amazing because here's where you can see in the blue and green lines how the whole industry has been improving in the observed to expected mortality. But then when you get to the last few quarters, which is the first four quarters of Quest, you can see that the Quest hospitals are having dramatically better improvement, more improvement, faster than the folks who are not engaged in Quest. And we don't think this is coding. Actually, our scientist has reviewed the data, and the data would indicate that Quest and non-Quest hospitals are improving coding at the same level. So this is about improving interventions, improving sepsis, improving where you provide palliative care. And with our database, we're actually able to start to identify what is it that causes this mark to move. Cost is to me one of the most interesting, because we were able to look at our whole database and also to look at the industry. And we actually went back even before Quest started. So we went back 9 quarters. And if you go back 9 quarters and look at it until the end of 2008, you see a 14% increase in the industry in cost per adjusted discharge. If you look at the non-Quest hospitals, but these are hospitals in Premier using our data, using our tools, it's a 10% growth rate in cost over the 9 quarters. If you look at the Quest hospitals, it's a 5% growth rate in cost over the 9 quarters. So what that tells me is that the Quest hospitals, focusing on harm and mortality and cost and patient satisfaction and evidence at the same time, are actually bending the cost curve. And I think that is exactly what we're trying to do as an industry with reform. Harm is hard. Harm is really hard, because when we set out a year ago, there were no automated measures of harm. There was no putting together composite harm index kinds of measures. And so we had to work long and hard with our hospitals to say, these are the first 30 we're going to target. And you can see the list. It's all the usual suspects. And we've now automated and are reporting on all 30, but we're waiting on our first quarter of data. So the year two results will come back a year from now and tell you what's happening in harm. We expect to see similar trends. The other one that's hard is patient experience, this patient satisfaction thing. We are using the HCAHPS measures around satisfaction, which also allow us to dig down into these drivers by using some of the other questions in the HCAHPS survey. There's a time lag that we're dealing with, and this will be something we also report out in year two. And then thirdly, we're moving down the path of comparative effectiveness. And we identified 6 suppliers who we wanted to see if we could start to test how their products might make a difference clinically, economically, from a safety perspective. And so we have these 6 suppliers working with us, and we're learning a lot about best practices, about how to treat disease states, and how much of a difference the supplies make or don't make, and how you connect the supply usage with the clinical outcome. So more to come on that. As we've studied the top performers, we see a couple of things. One is this collaboration thing, this opening the kimono, sharing best practices, putting it on a portal, automating this, and creating conversations about what is working at Memorial or what is working at SSM has really helped the other hospitals figure out what they could do differently. There's also been pretty clear indications of usual suspects. We are now in the process of building a waste index to try to find the usual suspects for waste. But we have found usual suspects for mortality, preventable death, preventable errors, and we then have the hospitals able to focus in on those usual suspects. I can't emphasize enough, really, this data transparency, agreement as to measurement, standard tools, and automation, because this is too hard to do manually. It's too hard to do manually. So we had to really get to standard measurement. And part of the reason we have Dr. Clancy and Alan Korn and others on an advisory panel is to help the industry converge the measures so that we end up with a smaller set of measures that actually move the mark, as opposed to sort of the shotgun approach to all the measures that we might take. Peer pressure works. They love to be in top performance, and they don't want to be in bottom performance. and showing that month in and month out really does help move the mark. There was also sort of a clear executive leadership that was required in top performers and a clear line of sight so that top performers understand patient-centered care and understand how their mission translates all the way to performance in these five dimensions. And it is sort of that road to high-value healthcare if you think about it that way. And then knowledge transfer. I mean, the knowledge transfer is the thing that's hardest in the healthcare industry. Today, it takes 17 years to get standard practice implemented across the country. We're trying to condense that into a year or 2 years or 3 years so that we can get standard practice implemented more quickly. The challenge our hospitals had, quite frankly, is they did all this with basically no reward. There is no reward pool. There is no financial incentive. In fact, there are financial disincentives to doing this because it might affect their revenue stream. Payers don't share the money back with them, and they've done it anyway because it's the right thing to do for patients. So I think as we go forward, I think the policy implications include we need things like value-based purchasing. We need things like bundled payment. We need things like accountable care organizations that really allow these incentives to be aligned. And we need to have in the transition, which will be the painful part, we need to have ways for hospitals to share the savings with payers and with government. And that patients should really have the ability to have transparency around all of this and around this data. So what we're going to deliver to healthcare and keep delivering is we're going to deliver now on these first three measures for year two and year three. We're going to deliver clinical best practices. The knowledge is being put together. The knowledge is out there on our portal. The knowledge is being shared with hospitals across the country. We're going to have identified what the drivers of mortality, harm, inefficiency, and satisfaction are, which I think will inform the debate. And I think the debate is a long-term debate. Because right now we just have high-level concepts about what reform will be. I think we will help define measures and methodologies, and I think we'll help by telling the stories. And actually, you have a little booklet out front, which is the stories of the top 32 high performers. And we need to tell those stories so other people can learn from them. We'll have the process maps and clinical decision-making tools, and we'll have the white papers and learnings from these suppliers that we're working with on the comparative innovation or comparative effectiveness program. So that's what we've done, and that's a year in. Our board has challenged us to get 50% of the hospitals, 50% of the 150, to top performance by the end of 3 years in all five dimensions at the same time. So year two is going to be detailed harm measures, patient satisfaction measures, and these supplier results. And then I think we will then engage, because the next evolution of this is how do we get to accountable care organizations. I mean, my view of this is hospital quality incentive demonstration was about process improvement. Quest is about systematic outcomes improvement in the acute care setting. And the next evolution is how do we start to take ownership of the health of the population and add ambulatory measures and add population health measures. And I do think the debate is in the right place now, which is the debate is how do we fix ourselves from a provider delivery perspective and how do we align the payment incentives to that and how do we become accountable for the patients that we serve in our geographies. So with that, I'm going to turn it over now to Dr. Carolyn Clancy.
Yes, of course.
Thanks, Susan. I'm sorry to interrupt the program. And Dr. Clancy, I'm very sorry to interrupt your presentation because we are anxious to hear it. But Congressman Barrow just arrived and wanted to say a few comments. And so we're going to squeeze him in the program very briefly and then get back to it. So Congressman Barrow, thanks for coming.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning.
I know what you're thinking. With the program as full and comprehensive as you got, they're slipping folks into the program. They'll be taking folks out of the program if they can. And I apologize for trespassing on your time. But I wanted to come and give y'all give you all a word of encouragement and a word of support. I want to thank you all for what you're doing. My name is John Barra. I represent Georgia's 12th Congressional District. That includes Savannah, Georgia. And I want to proudly acknowledge one of the hospitals in your high-performing hospitals category. It's Memorial Health Center in Savannah, which is being recognized as one of the high-performing hospitals under the Quest program. The Premier Healthcare Alliance is doing great work. Through the Quest program, y'all are helping lead the way to try and figure out how folks can do a much better job with the all-too-scarce resources we got to deal with. And I want to acknowledge the work that Phil Shaingold and folks at Memorial Health are doing along those lines. I want to put this in what y'all are doing in terms that even a member of Congress can understand. Just the 150-something odd hospitals that are participating in the Quest program have already managed to achieve a savings of over 8,000 lives as a result of the standards and the best practices that y'all are identifying and promoting and bringing to the fore. You're saving, on average, over $340 per patient. May not sound like very much, but it's over $577 million a year, $500 million a year. If all of the comparable hospitals in the country were participating in meeting the standards y'all have identified in Quest, we'd be saving 52,000 lives a year and saving more than twice as much money as we are right now, over $1.1 billion a year. I want to put these two things in perspective, lives and money. Over 2,000 years ago, a man that some folks identify as the great physician once said, "I have come among ye that ye might have life and have it more abundantly." Okay, 8,000 lives for the participating hospitals, something 52,000 lives if everybody was on board. That's a lot more life and a lot more life living to the most abundant that you can. But it's the money is so much more and so much less at the same time. The money we're talking about is far less in intrinsic value than the lives and the quality of the lives that this program is making possible and enriching through making healthcare more available to folks in a more effective way. It's so much less, relatively speaking. It's so much more when you consider it's all in addition. It's all in addition to the lives and the quality of life that are being enhanced. So in any way you want to look at it, what y'all are doing is making for a higher quality of life for more folks, saving lives, and saving all of us, the consumers, a boatload of money. Not to do what y'all are doing is worse than a sin. It's a mistake. It's a blunder. And if we can both do the right thing and do the smart thing, we'll all come out ahead. And I want to just come and give y'all an attaboy and an attagirl for what y'all are doing and encourage y'all to keep on doing it and know that those of us in Congress who are trying to promote what y'all are doing are looking to y'all for leadership in this area. Thank you for representing us all so well. God bless each and every one of you. Thank you.
Okay. So now we need to give a proper introduction of Dr. Carolyn Clancy, who is the director for the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, and she has been a wonderful advisor to us in this process. So, Dr. Clancy.
Well, good morning, everyone. I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here and congratulate this initiative on the work that they've been doing. As a liaison to the advisory committee, I just have to tell you what this feels like at these meetings, okay? You don't sit down, literally. Actually, we're allowed to sit for lunch, but it redefines what is meant by a working meeting. So I think that gives you a sense of the energy here. I think both members of Congress have given us a terrific overview of what are some of the problems facing healthcare. You've all heard this many, many times over. I want to put these results in context for a moment. Every year, ARC reports to the Congress on the state of healthcare quality and the state of disparities in healthcare. And what we find every year is that we're improving. That's really good. Statistically significantly. But 1.8% overall improvement in 2008. Secretary Sebelius released these reports in early May of this year. I think we were her first non-flu appearance. So I was very, very excited about that. So statistically significant, you tell me if that's important. It's headed in the right direction, but we have a long way to go. At the same time, we know that hospitals, physicians, nurses, pharmacists, other health professionals desperately want to do better. I don't believe that there's a healthcare professional breathing who thinks, can't wait to jump in the car today and have another mediocre day, even though our overall performance as a nation collectively is mediocre. You know, we supported a study earlier this year that was published about reengineering the discharge process, critical to preventing avoidable readmissions and what we used to call when I was a resident, bounce backs to the emergency room, okay? This process that they came up with, Project Red for re-engineered discharge, was stunningly successful, reduced subsequent readmissions and emergency visits by 30% each in the subsequent 30 days. I mean, this is big. It was even a randomized trial. I mean, this is very strong. We had a webinar, 2,200 hospitals signed up, which I take as very strong evidence that hospitals, healthcare professionals, and so forth want to do a much better job. So what this says is that all of the action is not so much in what to do, but how to do it. And that's really what we're learning from this initiative. The comparative innovation I just want to touch on for a moment as well, which is incredibly important. This year in the Recovery Act, we got $1.1 billion at HHS for comparative effectiveness research. I haven't had a lonely moment since about Thanksgiving when people on the Hill first started working on the Recovery Act and so forth. It's been very lively, has inspired a great deal of discussion. But there were two major inputs to the $400 million of that $1.1 billion that Secretary Sebelius will make recommendations about investing, not from her office, but through operating components of the department. The Institute of Medicine Committee, and also a federal coordinating council. Both groups, working very independently, concluded that this focus on, not just on clinical interventions, but also on care delivery interventions or comparative innovation. We don't even have very clear language, right? We know what clinical interventions are. The how here, we can't even describe very, very clearly. And I think that's what we're going to learn a whole lot about from Quest. So at the end of the day, I think what we all want is a healthcare system that is information-rich and patient-focused, that makes the right thing the easy thing to do. If any of you have stumbled into one, could we talk afterwards, please? I want to hear about it. Right now, doing the right thing is often incredibly difficult for all of the actors and actresses, as we say, in delivering care. And it's incredibly difficult for patients. I get lots of calls from people who say, you know, my mother-in-law has cancer. She was discharged, and effectively, we're lost. I don't know where to go. Did we miss something here? Was there, like, did I get a GPS? Did she miss something at discharge? And you know what the answer is? No, you didn't. That's actually how we do it. We expect you to figure out. So let me just close with a word on leadership, because I think that's incredibly important. This initiative recognizes that leadership is critical, and that hospitals that assume and just step up to the plate of leadership during these very challenging times can achieve great things. I don't think you can overstate that. One of the biggest things that we have to learn is which of these components or drivers are generalizable. They work everywhere. And which pieces need to be customized. We simply don't know that. I'm looking forward to continuing to learn from this initiative. So I want to end by saluting your efforts and congratulating you, and just to say we're going to be watching very, very closely, because we got to do much, much better than 1.8%, way better. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thanks for coming out this morning. I'm Marty Scott, the Vice President of Quality and Patient Safety at Memorial Health. And I wanted to tell you our story at Memorial Health, and our story is going to focus around moving what we call one of the big dots, and that was mortality index. In particular, well, the way we think about it is lives saved. Memorial's in Savannah, Georgia, and you're right on top of it right now. It's a 530-bed academic medical center. I want to give you just a little bit of background, so when you hear these numbers and things like that, you'll have a rich appreciation of what we were able to accomplish working with Quest and working with in the program. We have a four-year medical school on our campus. Mercer has a Mercer University School of Medicine. 2 years ago, put a four-year medical school on our campus. We have 6 residency training programs. We have a translational research program. We're a level 1 trauma center, level 3 neonatal intensive care unit. We have the only children's hospital in the region. So you can see we're the regional referral center for Southeast Georgia and the southern tip of South Carolina. So all the sick patients end up in our hospital, in addition to the other kind of community patients that end up there. Focusing on safety and quality has been a strategic initiative at Memorial for a number of years. In 2003, the medical staff initiated an error prevention training program. All of our team members, all of our physicians were trained in error prevention and safety techniques. That was in response to the Institute of Medicine's report that 100,000 folks are killed every year in our hospitals by medical errors. In 2005, we joined the IHI 100,000 Live campaign. We're able to make a positive contribution to that. In 2007, our medical staff formally adopted evidence-based care as our standard of care so that every patient would be getting the best evidence-based care that we could surmise from the literature, and then we could bring that to the bedside to the patients. That we participate in the hospital quality demonstration project that Susan and Blair have been talking about. We've already had rapid response teams, quality care bundles. We've always continuously seek to measure ourselves against outside other organizations. And that was when Quest came along, it seemed like another perfect opportunity to look outside ourselves and benchmark ourselves against other organizations that were on similar missions. But 2006 came along and we had some challenges, and this is going to be one of those transparency things from Quest. This was one of the other things we learned from Quest about transparency, is that we've had changes in our payer mix. We had an increase in uninsured patients. We had changes in how trauma was funded in the state of Georgia. We had changes in how Medicaid was funded. The bottom line was we lost $58 million in 2006. Focus shifted from patient care. Focus shifted to making the bottom line work, and that was what leadership was focused on. And we forgot that one of the core values of a hospital was taking care of patients. And patients come to us, and they really expect 3 things. It gets very simple. If you really focus on those 3 things and keep those 3 things in mind, it helps drive you along the way. Patients want us to not hurt them, heal them, and be nice to them. And they want those things in that order. If you're as nice as can be, but you hurt their mom, you hurt their dad, it wasn't a good experience. If you didn't give them the quality of care that they deserve, you didn't heal them, it wasn't a good experience. So we went back and said, this is our core value. This is what we really need to be doing as a hospital. We need to be focusing on those patients. And that was about the time that Quest came into our lives at Memorial and said, you know, this is another collaborative we're putting together and we'd like you to consider joining and participating. And we said, this is where we need to be as Memorial. We need to be back focused on those things that patient expects from us. Let's put safety and quality first on our agendas. Let's make that the first agenda item at every board meeting, which we did. Let's make that the first agenda item at every medical executive committee meeting, which we did. Let's talk about that at team leader meetings. Every time we have a group together, let's talk about safety and quality first and foremost, because after all, that's what patients expect from us. We told our team members that you can't change the payer mix. You can't change the funding from the legislature today. But what you can do when you get up today is that you can use those tools that we give you to create a safe day. We can decide that we're going to create a safe day. We're going to avoid harm in our patients. We're going to take those appropriate care scores, those appropriate care tools, those bundles, and we're going to deliver those to every patient, every time, every opportunity we have, and we're going to check ourselves against that. Are we actually doing that? And indeed, you can see that we were able to accomplish that, and that we're going to really focus on putting the patient and the family at the center of this. This is somebody's mom, somebody's dad, somebody's daughter, and that's what we're really going to focus on. And finally, we looked at that big dot, that mortality index. And the way we like to tell this story is the mortality index, if you took 100 people that come to our hospital with the expectation that they're going to die, remember we're a level 1 trauma center, we're a regional referral center for neonates, those preemies. If you took 100 people that come to our hospital, the expectation is they're going to die. In 2007, 1 out of 4 of those survived and went home. Working with Quest, that was our baseline, working with Quest in our first year, that number fell to 0.615. So almost 1 out of 3 of those people coming in expecting to die went home. Today, as we've continued to focus on appropriate care, avoiding harm, doing those things that we've learned from that collaboration that we've been able to learn and share across the Quest Collaborative, and those things that Susan mentioned about putting the patient in the focus, our mortality index now is 0.51. So 100 people coming to Memorial Health University Medical Center in Savannah, Georgia, expecting to die, almost half of those people are going to survive. Now, that's the other way to think about that is that's half of those people almost another 300 lives this year are going to go back and have another anniversary, another day at the beach, another birthday, get to hold their grandchild for another day. And that's what we're trying to focus on at Memorial Health University. That's what we learned from Quest. That's what we've tried to share with the other folks in Quest. And that's why I'm very proud to be recognized here today as one of the recipients of the top performer status. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Kevin Johnson, who's the Chief Medical Officer for the SSM Healthcare System in St. Louis, and he's going to share his stories as another top performer hospital. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. It certainly is a privilege to be here with all of you today. I'm the Chief Medical Officer of SSM St. Louis. SSM Healthcare is a national system, and SSM St. Louis has six hospitals in that system. Five of the hospitals are adult hospitals, and one is pediatric. Of the five hospitals in St. Louis in SSM, three achieved the award. And we have a fourth hospital who doesn't have the track record over a year but is currently performing at that level. So we're very proud of the work that's been done by our teams. I'd like you to take a look at this slide, and I apologize for one typo here. The typo is the arrows are not on the slide. The arrows are a critical piece. They tell the story. For mortality rate, there should be arrows in that column that all go down. So the mortality rates for these three hospitals in the first year of the Quest program decreased between 7 and 15%. Those are not the actual mortality rates. That's the amount of decrease. For cost, in the cost column, there should be arrows going down in that entire column as well. In these same hospitals, they had between an 11.4% and a 19.6% reduction in cost of care provided per patient. And if you look at the evidence-based scores, all of our hospitals are performing at the top performance level and had an additional incremental degree of improvement, so in that column all the arrows go up, of between 1% up to 11%. So in my mind, the story is we were able to reduce cost. We were able to improve the quality of the evidence-based care that was delivered, and we were able to reduce mortality. And we were able to do that in three of our five hospitals. How did we do it? Well, one thing we did is we took a rather innovative approach last year, and we underwent a major reorganization. With our six hospitals, we really created two regions. We created a North Operating Group region and a South Operating Group region. Well, what does that mean? What it means is that we consolidated the leadership for the three hospitals in the North and operate them as one hospital. We consolidated the leadership and a lot of the infrastructure in the three geographically South hospitals and operated them as one hospital. By doing that, we were able to take significant cost out of the organization. But then the question comes up, well, if you're reorganizing, you're consolidating, you're taking these resources, how in the world do you get better results? Well, what we ended up doing is pooling all those valuable resources, and we created a network approach. We coordinated all the work from a centralized function, and this is where I think it fit very well with Quest. We created network teams of all six hospitals, and we designed with representatives of all the hospitals on those collaborative committees, we decided what's the best way to do things. And then we would standardize that method of doing things across all six of our hospitals. And so the goal of at the network level was really to do the design and develop the best practices and redesign the major systems. And then the primary responsibilities at the hospital level was to do the implementation and deployment of those products. So we actually found we were coordinating things better, we were implementing best practices better at a significantly lower cost. We had standardized hospital teams. Previously, all of our hospitals operated as six separate silos. and now we brought them together under one structure, and we required all the hospitals to have the same basic infrastructure, the same type of hospital committees that linked to the network committees. So everything was very aligned and very integrated across the network. And it went all the way down to the department level, where if I was on a nursing unit on the fifth floor of DePaul Hospital, they developed specific goals for that department that were aligned with the entire organization, and that team on that unit had a poster on their unit with what their goals and what they were trying to achieve as a unit. And then each individual nurse or employee on that unit would have a passport that showed what's their personal role, what's their personal contribution to how they do their daily work to that department goal poster. And then that department poster was linked to what the hospital's goals and report card, scorecard was. And then that hospital's report card was linked to what we did at the network, and that was linked to the entire SSM system. Quest was a very good fit for our organization because I think one of the major benefits of Quest was the sharing and the learning. You know, the ability to talk to high-performing organizations and ask them, how are you doing that? How are you getting there? And be able to work out in some of the collaborative phone calls and some of the collaborative projects. Let's talk about it as a group together and then figure out what's the best way to do it. Then we could take those best practices and plug it into our system and really rapidly deploy and implement many of those best practices. Premier also had a very nice library of different presentations and different practices, different best practices, so even if you were not able to attend a meeting, you could go to that library and ask a specific question, figure out, hey, how did you do this, or find a presentation, and that was very beneficial. But the sharing of ideas and the learning was the critical piece. What were some of the other critical success factors for three of our five hospitals to achieve this level of performance? One was the primary focus on patient care. Patient care was our priority. Patient-centered care was a part of everything everybody did, no matter what your job was in the organization. We've also been working very hard on creating a safe and quality culture. This is like moving an aircraft carrier, and it does not occur over months or even a year. It takes a long time to get everyone on board. And I think we already know we have opportunities for improving that, and that's where we're going to spend a lot of attention this year. But we have made a significant difference over the last year in making quality and safety a priority for everyone in the organization. It's also critical to take a systems approach. The Institute of Medicine report, To Err is Human, identified that approximately 85% of the errors that occur in healthcare are related to a systems issue. It's not because of a person not following a policy or procedure, and sometimes there are those individual performance issues. But the vast majority of when things go wrong, it's because of a system problem. And so we need to redesign those systems and those processes to find a better way to work. Also, the collaborative teams. I think the more ideas you have to tackle a problem, the better product you're going to get in the end. And I think in any of the collaborative work that we've done, both with Premier as well as collaborative work we've done internally in our organizations, it's amazing the diversity of ideas you get. And the more diversity of ideas you get, generally the better product you end up with. And then concurrent evaluation and intervention. What does that mean? What it means is that we want to make sure patients are getting the correct care while they're still in the hospital. It's great to have detailed data and information and get a report that says, you know what, we were 95% compliant with our heart failure indicators. But what that means to that patient in the room that didn't get it is, you know, 95% was a good report card in school. It was an A. But when you look at it from a patient's perspective, 95% means one out of 20 patients did not get the care they were entitled to while they were in the hospital. So concurrent evaluation intervention means we're going to evaluate a patient while they're in the hospital. We're going to do everything we can to intervene to ensure they're getting the care they need while they're still there. And hopefully then, when we look at our results and our data, we'll find, yeah, we did a pretty good job. In our organization, I believe that everyone works very hard every day to fulfill our mission. And our mission at SSM Healthcare is through our exceptional healthcare services, we reveal the healing presence of God. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Clancy is going to have to leave now, I'm sorry to say, but thank you for being here. But we do have time for a few questions, if there are some. And thank you, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Scott, for your presentations. And thank you, everyone, for being here to hear about what we've done. Do we have any questions here?
Yes, sir. I had one for Dr. Johnson. You had 3 out of 5 hospitals. Were the other 2 not participating, or was their quality measure just a slower learning curve, or what were the objectives there?
The other 2 hospitals are participating. One underwent was the first of our hospitals in St. Louis to implement the electronic health record. And the electronic health record has many, many advantages, and I think it's going to be a great tool, but there's also a learning curve. And with our first hospital that went up on the electronic health record, we had about a 3 to 6 month gap in results, because it's, if you have a great tool for how to do something on paper and you go through the checklist and now you convert that to the electronic world, now the staff have an entire differently set of processes, and they have to find those documents and those tools in different places in the record. And it is quite an adjustment for at least 3 to 6 months undergoing implementation of an electronic health record. There were some other issues, some leadership engagement issues, which have been solved. And that one hospital is now probably one of the top performing of all of our hospitals in St. Louis. They just don't have the full track record yet. So I feel confident they will be there next year. The 5th hospital was a hospital that was very small, and their market share was deteriorating, and we built a new hospital in about 10, 12 miles away. So during this transition, they actually went from a hospital that was averaging 20 patients a day to moving to a new hospital that had a capacity for 150 patients a day, and within 1 month they had a daily census of 70 to 90. So we had to hire an additional 25 to 30% of staff. So it's a new staff, a new culture, a new patient payer mix, and so they had some gap in results. But they are also improving their results pretty significantly on a monthly basis.
Any other questions?
Sure. I wonder if you could talk about the hospital physician relationship. Were they mostly employed physicians or affiliated, and how did you work with them?
About a fourth of our physicians are employed. The rest are independent practitioners in our community. But any of these kind of transformations, in addition to the leadership commitment that you have to have your medical staff committed as well. A physician can certainly, by his or her words, deeds, actions, can kill any of these kind of safety quality changes. But, you know, physicians, this is what physicians want. Physicians want the same thing. They don't want, you know, they like Dr. Clancy said, nobody got up to be a mediocre job today. They want, you know, no harm and a perfect care for their patients. So we found it was fairly easy to engage our medical staff when you put the patient in the center. But you do have to have the physician engagement just as you have the leadership engagement. And 3/4 of ours were independent practitioners that had those same vision and commitments that we did.
and our organization is similar. We have 175 physicians that are employed by the organization, mostly primary care physicians, and we have 2,600 docs in SSM St. Louis. So we are primarily a community-based hospital model with an independent medical staff.
Well, I think we have spent the time that we had allotted for this. I want to say thank you to our panelists for participating, for our members for making the trek here, and for those of you who could make it for being here as well and hearing about some really pretty exciting results, frankly. And there's a lot more to come in the years ahead, the months ahead, which we'll be sharing with everybody, because as we said at the outset, our goal is to be transparent. Our goal is to improve healthcare broadly, not only with the hospitals in this collaborative, but broadly across the country. So our goal is to share what we're learning because our goal is ultimately to transform healthcare together by working with our members and then working beyond our members. So thanks, everybody, for coming. I hope this was informative and helpful, and there's a lot more to come in the future. Thank you.